The Guardian.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Today, too much football. Premier League, big Mancunian bullies continue to duff up the rest of the playground. What will happen, though, when they meet the big lads from the Foreign Academy up the road? Elsewhere, Arsenal worm their way out of trouble and break their duck with the Swans, and Stoke ruffle King Kenny's feathers, and loads more Premier League news. There's a look forward to the Champions League midweek games, Borussia Dortmund, Leverkusen, that kind of thing. We hear from Sid as Barcelona drop a two-goal lead, and we welcome back Il Campionato più bello del mondo on a great weekend for the old lady. All of that and more in today's Football Weekly. All right then, off we go. It's Amy Lawrence on board today. Hi, Amy.
Hello, James.
Lovely to see you.
Lovely to be back.
That's great to hear. Barry Glendening is also delighted to be back.
I am.
Yeah, and Simon Burnton. Simon, thanks very much for joining us today. It was a bit of a late call-up for you.
Yeah, I am also delighted to be here and a little bit shocked.
Best way to be, eh? Item one, then. Manchester, so much to answer for. Four rounds of football played, 33 goals scored by City United, six conceded, hat-tricks all round this weekend. Is it going to be like this all season?
Yeah, I think it is. I think you even look at Chelsea and they sort of seem not particularly important news, which you wouldn't have expected even at the end of last season with the new manager coming in. And you don't expect to be not focused on Chelsea.
But isn't that just a focus of the press's own obsession with the Manchester pair?
Well, I think there's good reason for it at the moment. I mean, United obviously are just incredible at the moment, and having had such a great season last season, do they look even better? And they've made so many changes, and you watch the likes of Jones coming in and looking like he's been there forever, and you look at the bench and all the players who aren't playing, and it just seems incredible. Ashley Young, etc. There's so many good stories coming out of Man United, and then you think, well, how can that actually be bettered? And they probably don't think it is, but for the outside eye, they probably are being bettered at the moment by Man City.
And even, do you think?
Well, I think so. I mean, even you've got to put United's eight goals against Arsenal into some kind of perspective, because you know Arsenal are so bad and were so bad that that's almost like, did they really do that well?
Yeah.
But City are. I mean, I just thought it was interesting when you watch
just
one
they
after
playing
the
Bolton this weekend. Now, Bolton gave City quite a game of it. They didn't give Manchester United anything resembling a football match.
Well, I also think it was interesting when you look at one straight after the other, as they were on Match of the Day, for example, and you get to see that kind of direct comparison. And United, I mean, maybe it's that we're all so used to them being so impressive, but there's that directness about them. But the way that City played was really almost so shocking that it was so brilliant. Mm. And with all due respect to Italian football, obviously, James, you don't always expect that from a Mancini team to be quite so beautiful on the eye. And some of the football they played was so exquisite. And yeah, granted, Wigan weren't that much of a barrier, but they really, I think, I can't wait to see them in the Champions League. I can't wait to see how they get on against that kind of opposition, frankly.
Napoli,
I think the other thing about Man City that I think was so obvious from even when the fixtures came out was you looked at their fixtures, and I don't think they could have created anything better to start the season. And it's giving them that perfect platform to really gel as a team with some of the new influences. And you're seeing to be able to switch between Aguero and drop Dzeko after all those goals. I mean, it's impressive stuff.
It certainly is. Also on the pod today, Barry Glendening and Simon Burnton.
Right, bye now.
I was reading Michael Cox's Zonal Markings column today, and obviously we've been critical in the past, particularly last season of Manchester City playing very conservative brand of football, and this year that's gone out the window. And Michael pointed out, using a series of colourful dots and arrows and dotted lines, that the reason for this is last season they rarely passed the ball into the box or played it around the edge of the opposition penalty area, whereas this season and in particular on Saturday, they just have three adventurous, flamboyant new players buzzing around the edge of the box, passing the ball, pinging around Barcelona style, and that's where all the goals are coming from. And it's great to watch, lovely to see. I deserve to eat a big slice of humble pie, because I think last season I was saying they'd be as bad, if not worse, this season in terms of conservatism. Now they've got their place in the big four, but have been proved well truly wrong once again.
Should we put that over there with your other slices?
Yes, it's a huge catering trolley of humble pie there.
I wasn't that bowled over by Manchester United for much of last season. And I don't think it's fair to say that they were so brilliant last season that their excellence at the start of this can almost be taken for granted. I think they've really, they've surprised me the way they've changed over the summer. I think that I expected great things from Aguero. I expected him to come into City's team and do brilliantly well. But I wasn't sure the same would happen with Cleverley and with Welbeck and Jones and Young. And I think that, well, that clearly City are exciting and deserve to have people praising them. But I think that Manchester United really are exciting.
Of course, caveat, at this point last year, we were raving about Chelsea in similar fashion. And look how that finished.
But I don't think that... like the fact that Manchester United and Manchester City are playing really well now, and we're saying that they're playing really well, doesn't mean that we're idiots if they're not playing really well in January.
That's true, listeners. Bear that in mind, OK? Question is, will they be as strong in Europe? Man United are taking on Benfica, currently second in the Liga Sagres. Undefeated after four games, there you go. Of course, Man United also have the Chelsea game coming up the weekend following. I don't know if that's going to complicate their plans at all. Man City, meantime, will be taking on Napoli, who went a goal down away to Chesney at the weekend, but then came back to win 3-1. Very lively game. They've spent a lot of money over the summer. Are there going to be any match for City, though? Let's ask resident City, our expert, James Horncastle. James, hello.
Hello, James. How are you?
Very well, thanks. But that's not what we're discussing here. We want to know, Napoli, can they offer a sterner test for Man City than the folk they've faced so far?
Well, there's something to prove for both teams, because even during the Maradona years, the sort of big regret was that Napoli, apart from winning the UEFA Cup, they never made inroads in the European Cup. They went out in the first round to Real Madrid in 87, and then they went out in, I think, the second round in 1990 to Spartak Moscow. So there's sort of unfinished business here. And also, I mean, I think where they differ from City is that where people have greater expectations because of the money that's been spent under the new owners at City, Napoli are kind of just there to enjoy it. And, I mean, they're really up against it because the draw is tough. But also, as we saw earlier in the summer when the fixture list for Serie A was dealt out, De Laurentiis obviously left in a huff. He jumped on the back of the scooter and went into the night, because this weekend, the coming weekend after the City game, they play Milan. Then after their next Champions League game, they play Inter. Then after the next one, I think they play Cagliari. And after the next one after that, they play Juventus. So they've been really dealt a tough hand, which could sort of scupper their chances on both fronts, if you like. So I think they're just going to go out to enjoy it. I mean, a lot of attention will obviously focus on the attack with Aguero in great form, and him coming up against Cavani, who was obviously a revelation last year in Serie A. But he was a little bit rusty on Saturday against Cesena. And one of the sort of positives, I guess, you could draw was that Napoli weren't dependent on him to win that game. But they'll be obviously hoping he's a lot better come their trip to the Etihad.
Well, Cavani seen as the big threat. And there was a lot of optimism around Napoli over the summer, the reinforcement campaign you mentioned, and people throwing them in as a kind of dark horses for the title even, perhaps. But there is still that question at the back, because the one area that they hadn't really strengthened a lot about was at the back. And when you think of Napoli up against the likes of Aguero and David Silva and Dzeko, Tevez, whoever's playing, your mind goes back to that that rude awakening they had when they took on Barcelona in the pre-season, when filled with good intentions, they turned up and almost took the lead against the Catalans, and then got, what was it, 5-0 they lost in the end, or 6?
Exactly. And I think that they had organised that friendly or encouraged Barcelona to invite them to that Gamper Trophy match, but because they wanted to test themselves against the best and obviously have the opportunity to say we're back in the big time as such. But that kind of backfired. I mean, the club weren't particularly sort of humiliated. There were no sort of, there wasn't a backlash from it. But I mean, the defence was really exposed there, and also the key components that they brought in to bolster that defence in the summer transfer window, namely Miguel Britos, the defender from Bologna. He's injured. He's out for 2 months, so they're going to be without him. And I think also their captain Paolo Cannavaro at the weekend was the one who was at fault for the Cesena's goal, which was scored by Roberto Guana. So yes, you know, I think it's going to be quite a it could be a rude awakening. I think Mazzari, certainly in this after Saturday, has been saying they need to be more aware when it comes to their marking. They need to be more aware on dead balls. So I think that's it's going to be sort of trying to outscore each other at this moment in time, which could prove difficult.
It certainly could. James, thank you very much indeed for that little heads up on our friends from Naples. And we'll catch up with you again soon. All right, then. Well, more Champions League talk to come. Amy, you mentioned Chelsea. And how about that Daniel Sturridge, eh?
It's just so interesting when you look at Torres. And you want, you know, the whole big Chelsea question really for Villas-Boas was, what was he going to do about Torres and how was he going to reorganise or get the best out of him, etc., etc.? And when you think back to some of the previous Chelsea big, big stars that were clearly bought as marquee signings by Abramovich, obviously Shevchenko is one that springs to mind, and the idea that he was being foisted on the manager to an extent, you know, there was a bit of a thinking that, you know, somehow Torres has to be accommodated. And I think it's quite interesting to see that the manager is so early in the season, you know, making his mind up for himself and clearly not feeling any pressure to play him if he doesn't wish to at the moment.
Little comparison between Shevchenko, the great Chelsea bust, and Torres. Shevchenko, after 22 appearances, had scored 6 goals for Chelsea. Torres, just the one. It was, of course, a victory for Chelsea away to Sunderland, Barry.
Yes, fully expected, to be honest, that the story at Sunderland over the weekend. Well, there was rumours that Niall Quinn had resigned as chairman.
Was that to do with the Asamoah Gyan business? Or what?
I'm not sure, but he refuted them and is still is very much chairman. You're just smirking away at my misfortune here.
No. I'm just delighted to see you, you know. So
I nearly got arrested over the weekend.
Yeah, with your plasma TV business, yeah.
It's not been a good few days.
All right. Well, you didn't get arrested.
No, I didn't. But myself and a mate were... a friend of mine is leaving the country to go travelling for a couple of years. So I bought his flat screen TV off. And myself and another friend were spotted scurrying out of his house, carrying this monstrosity, putting it in the back of an Audi. And 15 policemen in a minibus pulled up beside us and sort of asked us what we were doing.
Right.
So I just had to show them ID, and that was it. Yeah, fine.
All right.
So just carry ID, and you can loot televisions all you like.
All right, yeah. Top tip from Barry Glendinning. Didn't you have a point about Sunderland back?
Oh, sorry, yeah. Asamoah Gyan is gone.
Yes.
He cost 13 or 14 million last season, mm-hmm. scored 10 goals, and now he's gone to Al Ain in the Emirates, just south of Dubai, where he's going to triple his wages. I know I have a better idea where it is than Steve Bruce, I will say, in my defence. But he's going to triple his wages there. And this team, they won the Asian Champions League once, I think about 8 years ago.
Right.
They play in purple as a tribute to Anderlecht for some reason or other. And they have two different home stadiums. I think the maximum one holds 15,000, the other holds 12,000. And Walter Zenga is a former manager.
Well, there you go. A lot of debate about what such an illustrious player, an African Player of the Year, is doing at a club so far off the footballing map. But I guess that's why he's made the move away from Sunderland.
Oh, you got me there.
But there you go. They are at least getting 6 million for the loan for this season, apparently.
Right. I mean, Steve Bruce doesn't come out of this looking at all well, and he was complaining about Gyan's lack of loyalty, which, coming from Mr. Loyalty, Steve Bruce, is a bit hypocritical, it has to be said.
Gyan put Steve's nose out of joint a bit. Sunderland humour. Anyway, well, there you go. So, but you don't seem overly upset about Sunderland and this latest defeat. That is what? Their seventh home defeat out of their last 8 fixtures.
Well, I'm not upset because I completely expected them to lose, and I sort of thought they'd lose by more, to be honest. Don't like to see anyone lose their job, but I can't see Bruce being there for much longer. He seems to have a huge problem motivating the team, and that's been apparent for the last 2 seasons.
What do you give him, weeks, months?
I don't think it really matters.
Him or Steve Keane, who's going to be first?
I'd say Keane would go first.
Really? Okay.
Which is bad news for Bruce.
Right. Keane, a little bit unfortunate in this weekend's trip to Fulham. I don't know if you caught that controversy in the final minute. I'm getting a shaking of head from Reece Ben. Outside top 4, I don't talk about that. But Speaking of which, speaking of outside the top four, actually, Arsenal.
Back in the race. I was trying to keep a straight face to say that.
All right. I've got a note here. Never mind the top four. Amy thinks the bottom four is more realistic, eh? Or were you just exaggerating?
Well, that? I mean, I do think that there is probably more to Arsenal's malaise than meets the eye, and it's quite difficult to pin down. But the underlying feeling you get is that most people around the club are quite miserable, really. And you know, even despite obviously the new arrivals, I think it was a bit optimistic for people to turn up on Saturday and expect instant change. And for as well as the debutants did, and it was you know, positive enough without being sort of mind-blowing, there still seems to be a sort of I suppose when you're on the kind of run that they've been on, you don't expect everything to click instantly back into gear, but it's still quite like trudging through treacle a bit by sort of standards Arsenal would like to expect of themselves.
Arteta, do you think he fitted in well?
Yeah,
Saka, I mean, the new boys, basically. Well, what do you reckon?
Mertes Saka did generally do well, but I mean, it's. I do wonder. I'd quite like to see a kind of mythical race between him and Pascal Sagan, because, in fact, you could maybe make a sort of footballing equivalent of the famous Monty Python upper class twits race of sort of some of the slowest footballers ever. I mean, he's a really good player, but he's really lacking in pace. And I think on the whole, he'll probably get away with it. But it'll be interesting to see when you see with the kind of speed that the best teams are playing at the moment in the Premier League. He might be a bit exposed.
What about Arteta, though?
Arteta, I think, needs a little bit of time probably to communicate better with his teammates, because obviously they're all very new to one another. But he's clearly got the kind of class, and I think it's really going to be a help for some of the younger players around him, because it's a very young midfield. When you look at the likes of Frimpong, Wilshere is obviously unavailable at the moment. When he comes back, Ramsey, they do need a more experienced head around them to guide them through some of the some of what they're going to expect in a tough Premiership season. So I think he's going to be useful mentally as well as what he can just produce on the pitch.
Arsenal are top of two tables. One, of course, is the cards table, ill-discipline. Once again. Also, the man from Nantucket posting in that the constant injury crisis has made them the club with most. Although other people say Chelsea got more players that injured, but
it just does seem a kind of relentlessness about Arsenal's injury problems, that it's always quite important players that are out. And I think, for talking about Mertes Saka, if he had Vermaelen alongside him for the next couple of months to settle in, I think it would help enormously.
Right.
Koscielny did well, I think, and actually tried to show, I think, a little bit of leadership on the weekend, but that's not really his forte. So they're always trying to get by, and Wilshere's a massive miss at the moment.
And Swansea?
Swansea, they just lack a bit of cutting edge, really, and obviously a tiny bit of concentration lapse here and there would probably help them if they could cut their...
You're talking about the goalie there.
Sorry for the goalie, but... Yeah. But they didn't look bad. You know, you see promoted teams that in the first month or so struggle a bit more, and they look like they've got something about them, but they just need to find goals, I think.
It's a difficult time of year if you're not getting results early in the season. There's a remorselessness about the Premier League, and if when you start you're playing okay, but losing, it can be very hard, it seems, to maintain belief. So I think they're a decent team, but they need to get some results quite soon. Otherwise, it's just going to start to feel... It's going to slip away from them.
Mm.
It may only be September.
Mm. All right, then. Well, Arsenal are in Dortmund midweek, Amy?
Yeah.
Tell us about Dortmund.
Great place to watch football ever had the chance. One of the world's great stadiums.
Yeah.
They've got this old-fashioned Kop, which won't be... standing on Champions League nights, because they have to put the seats in. But
they put seats in and then take them out again?
They do, I believe. And if you're lucky enough to watch a game there when they're standing up, I think they get 80,000 in there, and it's fantastic. Fantastic place to watch football.
What game did you see there?
People, I think, when they put they lose 15,000 from their capacity when they stick the seats in.
Right.
So a very slightly more muted atmosphere for the European nights.
Right.
But still.
But Arsenal will be used to that from...
well, not that muted.
Right, oh, sorry. Okay. What's the feeling about Arsenal in this game?
Well, I think they'll be grateful to have a few of the... you talked about the discipline before. A few of the players back who have been suspended. Alex Song and Gervinho, who was particularly impressive in the Udinese away game in qualifying. So I think they're grateful to get a few more slightly experienced bodies back in the team. And obviously I think there's a lot of people going to be looking at Arteta in this particular kind of game to see if he can show on the Champions League stage. I think it's what he's been, main reason he's been saying he's been coming really is to get the chance to show what he can do in slightly more elevated or different kind of challenging circumstances. But Dortmund, I think, had a great season last season. You've got to bear in mind also their German champions, Arsenal, finished fourth and really with an abysmal end to the season. So you'd expect Dortmund to be favourites, and they've got a very, very good young team with Mario Götze. I probably said that wrong. I'm very keen to have a look at him, and he's got rave reviews. I would like to have seen him and Wilshere playing against each other to get a sort of comparison, teenage, great young midfield playmaker types. I think they lost on the weekend, which was unusual for them to lose a home game.
And Götze wasn't
playing, so he's back in the team, I imagine, for the Arsenal match.
Mm. Am I right in thinking that Borussia Dortmund nearly went sort of did a Leeds in 2009, and Jurgen Klopp then had to rebuild the team on a tiny budget?
You're right, Barry.
I listen.
Yeah, excellent. Right. Chelsea, meantime, are taking on Bayer Leverkusen, who have started the season strongly. 3 wins and a draw against champions Dortmund, actually. There you go. And what do you know about Bayer Leverkusen?
I know that they're owned by a pharmaceutical company, and that my old man once got a nice jolly to Leverkusen to watch a match because he'd sold X amount of their products in his capacity.
To cows,
yes.
Okay.
And he came back looking very refreshed. Imagine. That was many years ago. I couldn't tell you what they've been up to since.
Oh, I note that Sidney Sam scored twice for them on the weekend. I think they played on Friday night. Sidney Sam sounds like he is the real world alias of a superhero.
Right.
By day known as Sidney Sam.
All right. Depending on when he operated.
Something man.
Right. Okay. Cool. We'll see. Bayern Munich, they had a 7-0 win.
And our old friend Mario Gomez scored 4 on the back of the 3 he'd scored the previous week.
He's on fire.
And he couldn't hit a barren door with a banjo. No, that's not right. But anyway, you know what I mean.
He couldn't have done that.
During Euro 2008 when we were ridiculing him on a regular basis.
Yeah. Laughs on us, eh?
Yeah.
Pass that humble pie over here. Right. Well, it is a busy midweek of Champions League fixtures. As the group stages get underway, all sorts of other things to talk about. We'll get Sid on the line later to tell us about Real and Barca and all that kind of stuff. Barcelona, of course, taking on Milan. That's a big clash. Let's just round out one or two other bits of Premier League stuff, though, because there was plenty of other stories this weekend. Liverpool losing at Stoke. Not a huge surprise, this, although a lot of people raising their eyebrows over the fact that Liverpool had something like 75% possession in this game.
Yeah, they did enough, or they should have won the game comfortably, but didn't. And then Kenny Dalglish went on this strange post-match, I suppose, I wouldn't say it was a rant, but he was displeased and speaking of conspiracies against Liverpool. Now, there isn't a conspiracy against Liverpool as much as many fans, many clubs like to think there's conspiracies against their teams. There isn't. Now, it's difficult to know whether he honestly believes that or it's just sort of putting it out there so whoever rests their next game will have the pressure put on them to give any contentious decisions their way.
But the previously cuddly Kenny beginning to show his claws a bit.
Yeah, well, some people are saying it's a sign he's under increasing pressure and starting to crack under the strain, which I think is nonsense.
Why? Because he complained about
some what he saw as bad decisions. I thought they could have gone either way, and they were just unlucky not to get them. Another day they could have got a penalty. I mean, the penalty that Stoke got was entirely deserved. Carragher got on the wrong side of his man and brought him down. But what I thought was interesting about that game was that Andy Carroll was left on the bench. Kenny Dalglish had stuck up for him during the week and then proceeded to leave him on the bench for a game in which you thought Andy Carroll would be the perfect person to have up front.
That's very true. Craig O'Banana's posting in with one or two interesting stats. Mentioned the kind of the football fans turning their noses up at football played at Britannia, shocker. Liverpool had 73% points at Craigo Bananas, 24 shots to Stoke's 3. Of all the Stoke players, Begovic had the most touches, completed the most passes, the same number as the Liverpool keeper. The most interesting stat is that Ryan Shawcross completed just 4 passes in 90 minutes, and 3 of them were back to his own keeper. Amazing.
But it's possibly not the best game for a player like Carroll.
Ah.
Only if you intend to kind of fight fire with fire. But a back line with Shawcross and Huth and Upson in.
Of course, fire plays for Stoke, so I don't know if that would be...
Well, that would just confuse matters, wouldn't it?
Right.
And a team as physically strong and as tall as Stoke are perhaps the worst team for Carroll to play against.
Ooh.
And they might have been... I mean, history shows they had plenty of possession, plenty of chances.
OK, producer Ben, we're going to need more humble pie. All right, then. What have you got to say about Spurs? Adebayor, do you know that he has now scored a goal on his Premier League debut for Arsenal, Man City and Spurs? How about that?
Wherever next. All I would say is Adebayor has got a history of starting well for clubs. And then a history of dipping off.
All right, well, it's a terrific start and a great result for Spurs, who you recall were pointless at the bottom of the table and now are very much not. Ha-ha. Right.
What did you make of the talk... I think it was the People on Sunday, that England are going to jettison Capello before Euro 2012 and then bring in Harry.
What did I make of it? It's England talk. And I mean, they could put a brick on the bench.
Fair point.
And it's all, and then Harry comes in. I don't know. Maybe it would work. I mean, the whole thing's a kind of, it's a black hole. It sucks in rational thought and nothing can emerge from it, England. We've only got you for another 3 minutes, Amy. Barry is going to fill that with a particularly interesting tidbit about David Moyes.
No, I saw a remarkable interview with him on, I think it was Football Focus over the weekend, where he was talking about the new striker he'd brought in during the transfer window, whose name I can't remember.
Oh, Dennis Strakalosi.
That's the fella. And I have never seen any manager sound less enthusiastic about a new signing ever. I thought it was a astonishing thing to say in public.
What did he say about him?
Well, he basically said, we only got him because we couldn't get anyone else. We'd had a look at him before, decided he wasn't good enough, but because he was available and we were desperate, we brought him in. He might do okay, but frankly, I kind of have my doubts. And that was it. If I was the player in question, I would be very, very wounded and offended by such a hollow endorsement.
Well, Everton had a 2-2 draw with Aston Villa at the weekend in the derby of the Ginger Managers. Did he play, Strakalosi?
No, he was an unused substitute.
All right. Then.
But I thought he carried himself very well on the bench.
Right.
But is it not inherent in the kind of deadline day transfer that quite often are, I mean, they're very obviously afterthoughts. Hmm. If someone rings you up at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on deadline day, you weren't number one on their list of targets.
Right.
So I think he's probably aware of his position in the scheme of things.
Unless your club's trying to play a really big poker game.
Possibly.
So ironic that you should be so understanding of his position, given the way that you made...
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Barney Rone, he was our multi-million pound unreachable target.
Yeah.
Yeah, good old Barney.
And we'd West say, Brom. Simon, he might do okay.
I'm very aware of my position in the Football Weekly scheme of things this morning.
I think you're proving a lot of people wrong.
Well, excellent.
Amy, excellent. West Brom got their first win. Well done, Roy Hodgson.
Absolutely, yeah. Bravo.
Okay, excellent. Amy, you've got to leave us now.
I have. I'll just leave you with one thing.
Yes.
I was thinking about Aguero, because how could you not after this weekend? Mm. And who's the player who has really come in and made the best immediate impact in the Premier League? There you go. I was just going to leave you with that.
Well,
because it's
answer.
Very unusual that you find particularly players coming from Latin countries and a Latin background that they you know, traditionally it's not unusual or unexpected to expect a player to need a few weeks or a few months even to really find their best.
I thought Nasri had a brilliant debut for Man City.
Yeah, but he's already been in the Premier League.
Oh,
I'm talking
see.
About someone coming from outside and settling in so wonderfully well.
The manager's actual debut, because he played within 28 hours.
What about Suarez at Liverpool?
Well, there you go. I tell you, I'm just throwing it in I'm going to say bye.
Oh, thanks. Now, lots of people posting in saying, can't wait for the Serie A roundup this week.
But that's just you posting under a series of different nom de plumes.
As I say,
it?
Lots of posts this week saying, can't wait for the Serie A roundup this week because there were loads of goals. Serie A, they've been on strike the first week, then we had the international break. Finally, things got underway, and it looked like every team just couldn't wait to get out there and score some goals in classic Italian fashion. And boy, did they, Simon. It's rhetorical, they did. It 35 goals, all kicked off Friday night. Milan and Lazio, a 2-2 draw. Milan went two goals down, came roaring back. Lazio looked good, though. Gibril Cissé and Miroslav Klose both scoring on their debut. And then Sunday night finished off with this bizarre Palermo-Inter game, which saw Inter twice ahead, but losing 4-3.
That was sensational.
Because
I think seven goals and six of them were really, really good.
Yeah, well, there were great goals all over Serie A this weekend. There were some really, really good. I loved Marchisio's fourth goal for Juventus. And it was a very good weekend for Juventus in particular because Milan didn't win, Inter lost, Roma lost, and the situation there getting steadily worse. They got knocked out of the UEFA Cup preliminaries, or Europa League preliminaries. Now they've lost their home opener against Cagliari. So a lot of questions there about whether Enrique is going to be there too long. And, well, a lot of questions now about Inter's manager, Gasperini, because they only got him when Marcelo Bielsa, who was their first choice, turned out to have already given his word to Athletic Bilbao. And they've begun with this defeat to Palermo, conceding four goals for the first time since, I've got this written down, so in March 2004... which was when Marcello Lippi had a brief spell as their manager. He resigned after that game. And some people suggesting with the controversy over the current manager, Gasperini, the fact that he uses Schneider out wide instead of at the heart of their the attacking midfield, the fact that he likes to play three at the back, which was an utter disaster against Palermo. I mean, Barry, as you probably saw, you had Samuel and Lucio jogging back across the wide expanses of the Favorita turf and the goals are flying in around them. So,
Who was the scorer, the captain of Palermo?
Miccoli.
Yeah, tell me about him. He looked...
Well, he is the Romario of Salento. Yeah, Salento's the area, is the kind of the high heel of the right. Italian boot. And that's where he comes from. And he is a short little chap, but very, very technically gifted. And he missed about a year, having completely destroyed his knee. But came back and I think scored in his first game back. He's an absolutely brilliant player, very, very dedicated to two clubs, Lecce, his hometown, and Palermo. And it's interesting, one thing that's seen as significant is the fact that, there's not a lot of patience for managers in Serie A. They've fired two before the season had even begun, indeed. And probably the least patient of all the clubs is Palermo. Their current man is their fourth manager in the last 5 months. He was previously managing the youth team. Divis Manja is his name. And Miccoli came out and told the ultras that, I like this one. This one I like. So, that and the fact that he's just beaten into 4-3. Manja's rather ironic comment was afterwards, I might get another game in charge. But, wouldn't count on it. But anyway, they look good. So, yeah, lots of question marks over into today's Gazzetta dello Sport. It's basically a 20-page special about why Gasperini's got it all wrong. And the guy who's got it all right so far is the man who's got Juve on top of the table, Antonio Conte, with a 4-0 win over Parma, which featured Andrea Pirlo, who they picked up from Milan this summer, looking absolutely magisterial there in the midfield, although Parma basically didn't just let him stroll around, sort of pipe and slipper time. But it was great. It was just dinking balls over the back line, and players were getting on the end of it. And the Marchisio goal, the fourth one. Oh. Magnificent. Anyway, it's all going to be very interesting this midweek when we see Inter take on Trabzonspor. Napoli, we've already talked about them. Not sure how well they'll do at the Etihad Stadium against Manchester City. It'll be interesting, that one, won't it? Yeah?
Yeah, definitely one to watch.
Yeah, I think it'll be a lively game, yeah. Also, one of the blue chip, one of the marquee games of this midweek has to be Milan's game with Barcelona. And to tell us a little bit more about the Catalan side of that, it's Sid Lowe.
Hello.
Hola.
Hello, James. How are you?
Hola, Sid. I'm very well. How are you?
I'm not too bad, thank you, yeah.
Great. Dog well?
Dog's very well, yeah.
Wife well?
Wife well, thank you, yes.
Good. All right, then. Now, Sid, Barcelona dropped to 2-goal lead this weekend. What on earth happened there?
Yeah, what happened there was that one of the two goals was a hilarious gift. Now, if I say to you that David Villa, who of course everybody knows is a striker, played a wonderful through ball for Real Sociedad striker Agudeci to give Real Sociedad the second of the two goals that they scored. It was a 40-yard pass back from a sort of high left wing position, which split the two Barcelona defenders, sent Agudeci one-on-one with the keeper. He went round the goalie, and as he went for goal, Sergio Busquets was dashing back. Busquets tipped it onto the bar with his hand, hit the bar, came down. Real Sociedad scored anyway, so therefore Busquets wasn't sent off. What happened, I think, really and truly, was that Barcelona, who were 2-0 up after 11 minutes, probably felt that it was already done and therefore kind of completely took their foot off the gas, basically pissed around a little bit and got caught out horribly for it. But Real Sociedad, I think, probably deserved a 2-2 draw as well.
All right. Tell us about Barcelona-Milan then.
Well, I don't want to kind of sound like this doesn't matter, because it does matter, and it's a game that I think is quite exciting in terms of the size of the two clubs and the importance and so on. But there's something about group games that always means that they lack a little bit of that edge. What this does have edge for, as much as anything else, I think, is the return of Zlatan Ibrahimovic to Barcelona and face-to-face with Guardiola. Again, of course, those two fell out rather spectacularly when Zlatan left. He said something like, "But Pep Guardiola always leaves the room when I walk in. I wonder if he might be frightened of me." Why you'd be frightened of Zlatan Ibrahimovic, you'd never know. So that's going to be pretty entertaining.
Sid, because he's a black belt of taekwondo, of course.
Black belt of taekwondo, 6'3", and a little bit nuts. I mean, those are good reasons to be frightened of him, aren't they? And Christ Almighty, he would terrify me if he was ever in a bad mood with me.
Yeah. So,
and also, it also proposes the possibility, of course, of Zlatan Ibrahimovic going up close and personal once again with Gerard Piqué.
Absolutely, yeah.
Only it doesn't, because I think I'm right in saying that Piqué's injured and not going to be fit for the game. Oh. So that completely ruined that joke. Damn.
That's a shame. And this is a shame, no Pipo Inzaghi. I bet the Catalans are relieved about that.
I bet they are. Yeah. I bet they are. Pipo Inzaghi, I think, in Spain, largely, not everybody, but largely has the same sort of reputation that he has everywhere else, that no one can quite understand why he scores so many goals. No one particularly likes him, and no one particularly thinks he's very good. Now, obviously, that many goals later, I think it's probably time that people did think he was reasonably good. By the way, Barcelona will also be without Alexis Sanchez, who picked up an injury this weekend and is going to be out for a couple of months.
It's a huge game, of course, but it is a group game, and those two expected to go through, although we've seen surprises on that front before now. Villarreal taking on Bayern in the group of very toughness.
Yeah, woof. It's quite a good one, that, isn't it? I think that Villarreal actually, in truth, don't entirely convince at the moment. They were absolutely slaughtered, as I think everybody knows, in the first week by Barcelona. They got 2-2 draw this weekend with Sevilla, although I think they deserved a hell of a lot more, not least because they were down to 10 men and they still dominated the game. I still think Villarreal are a very good side, as they showed last year getting to the semi-final of the Europa League. But there is something that's not quite functioning for them at the moment. They've played the last couple of games as well with suicidally high defensive line. I don't know enough about Bayern, and I'm sure Rafael can tell you much better than me, but they may well be looking at Villarreal and thinking, oh, quite fancy, look at this.
All right. What about Real Madrid? What do they do this weekend?
Real Madrid were 4-2 winners against Getafe, and this weekend was an interesting one because it's off the back of the meeting of clubs last week. 12 of the Spanish First Division clubs met because they want to try and challenge the situation in Spain, and it's really about redistribution of wealth and the complaint that Madrid and Barcelona are running away with it. So what happens this weekend, classic Madrid and Barcelona, for the first time in ages, everyone says, yes, sod it, there's no point in watching those two. Let's watch some good games. Villarreal Sevilla, brilliant game. Valencia Atletico Madrid, great game as well. And then, so of course, Real Madrid and Barcelona think, well, we want to get everyone's attention again. So Barcelona go and drop 2 points, draw 2-2. Madrid were made to struggle a little bit against Getafe. They went 2-1 up thanks to a penalty that should never have been given. Whether or not it's a foul, I'm not completely sure. One thing is for sure, though, it was outside the area. They eventually won 4-2. So that's created this backlash in Spain. Everyone says, see, there's not that much wrong with the league. Madrid were made to suffer and Barcelona drew. Yeah, not that much wrong with the league. Neither team actually lost this weekend. And the reality, the kind of structural and fundamental problems of La Liga still exist.
Well, indeed they do. Unlike a certain hat shop in Seville.
Yeah, I just when I read this story, the reaction is just, oh Christ, Arsenal, have you really not got anything better to do? For those that don't know the story, there's a hat shop in Seville called Arsenale, and Arsenal have taken them to the copyright cleaners and said they have to change their name and close down. This woman who makes these hats and imports these hats has called her shop Arsenale. Now, there's two reasons for this. One is that it's in the Arenal area of Seville, so all she's added is an S to that. She says she's called it Arsenale after some shipyards in 15th century Venice, I think.
Well, doesn't very kind of, Arenal means Arsenale. Arsenale is basically the shipbuilding area of Venice, and isn't that what the Arenal was in Seville?
Well, Arenal is the port area of Seville. Whether there's a direct connection between the Venice Arsenale or not, I'm not
honestly
not sure.
It's got not a lot to do with Woolwich, has it?
It hasn't got a lot to do with Woolwich. It hasn't got a lot to do with Andrea Chavin either, as far as I can make out. It's got absolutely bugger all to do with Arsene Wenger, who also wants to be looking over his shoulder if they're going to start suing people with suspiciously similar names. And this, you know, it leads to all sorts of ridiculous situations. You think, well, they've taken on a hat shop called Arsenale, which isn't said the same, isn't the same number of letters. And they're saying, and actually, you know what, in all of this, legally they're right. They actually have won the case, or at least they've been told by the judge that they've got a case. So legally they're right, but legally doesn't mean anything. And how long before they start taking on specialist porno websites?
It's an interesting point, Sid. You say legally they're right. So this was a Spanish court that ruled that this foreign football club could force a name change on an honest woman's millinery.
Millinery. I do like that word. Hattery, hattery.
Isn't there an uproar in Spain? Aren't they up in arms about this notion of foreign football clubs coming over here and telling us what to name our hat shops? I'm serious.
I think they should be more angry. When you see the footage of this woman, she says she knows nothing about football. Frankly, you can believe that she knows nothing about football. She must be, to be honest with you, I reckon she's secretly quite pleased. This is great, great publicity for her. And I promise that next time I'm in Seville, I will go to the Arsenale shop and I will buy myself a natty straw boater and wear it with pride.
Good for you, Sid.
But doesn't Victoria Beckham have previous in this field? And
her people tried
to launch legal action against Peterborough because they called themselves the posh.
Are you serious? I'm deadly serious.
No, it's absolutely true. She did. She tried to take on Peterborough because they were called the posh. Because, of course, she's been around much longer than Peterborough has. And, of course, she's much more entitled to the name posh than them because it is, after all, her birthright name, which she was given at birth and not at all some bullshit made up thing by a music promoter or anything.
You're very cynical, Sid.
Yes,
it doesn't become you.
All right, producer Ben wants to know if Fulham are going to go after men who meet in toilets next.
Well, they might. They might.
They might.
James, you're going to have to watch out again. That's two already, though.
Yeah, that's astonishing. That posh spice, posh TM spice story. That really is.
And is it?
Yeah, it is.
Is it really?
Yeah, I'm astonished. I mean, really. Listeners.
Well, what I'm surprised about, and we go back to the Arsenal thing,
is
that legally they may have been right, but what I'm surprised about is this is essentially an attempt to protect your brand name and your brand image, as indeed it was in the case of Posh. And don't the people who are doing these things realise that if these stories get out, you don't protect your brand image, you instead make yourself look like a complete and utter, well, Arsenale. It's not a football club, it's a hat shop.
Right.
Maybe
you're not going to get confused, are you? You're not going to accidentally buy a ticket to a hat shop against Fulham.
It might have a better chance of beating Fulham than Arsenal.
Nicely turned back onto the football, though. Yeah. Well done for that. And having... sorry, Simon.
No, nothing. I've just spent the last quarter of an hour trying to work out a way of crowbarring Manchester City and Manchester United scoring hat tricks and Arsenal closing down hat shops into some kind of funny line and failing. So,
will James Milner be able to sue this woman as well?
I'd like to know if you've succeeded. Have they produced a punchline?
No, I've been trying my very best. Can't do it. Listeners.
Could be a listener competition for
them. Yeah, below the line. Right. If you can write the joke I failed to come up with, then go right ahead.
All right, then. Excellent.
Barney would have come up with one.
Barney would have. That's it, then, for today's Football Weekly. We'll be back on Thursday, listeners, some of us. And many thanks to Sid Lowe for joining us, James Horcastle a little bit earlier on, Amy Lawrence, Barry Glendenning.
Oh, goodbye.
Yeah. Simon Burton.
Been a treat.
Thank you very much, Simon. We enjoyed you hugely. And you, producer Ben, and you, the listener, too. We're back on Thursday to round everything up with Football Weekly Extra. Do join us for that. In the meantime, from all of us, here it is. Goodbye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.